Hello and welcome. My name is Chris Allen and this podcast is brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. You can see the list of interviewees and the timings in the show notes. But I'm going to be hearing from Ian Henry with his special poem for Remembrance Sunday and also some reflections on Remembrance Sunday from Councillor Bhupinder Gokhale. I will also be hearing from Simon Inglis, Superintendent Simon Inglis, about a really important survey around the safety of women and girls, and also Alex Spencer from The Haven. They're going to be collecting stories for their 50th anniversary next year. Steve Evans is the councillor who is responsible for the environment and climate change. What's Wolverhampton doing that might contribute towards tackling climate change, especially in the light of COP27? Chris Burden, Councillor Chris Burden, is the education lead on the City Council as well. Some policies are being developed, are built around events really, supporting families and young people and children with special educational needs and disabilities. And also we're going to be hearing from John Denley about an award that they have got and also the importance of making sure we're well topped up with our COVID jabs as well. First, hello, it was Remembrance Sunday last Sunday, and here is our poet in residence, Ian Henry, with his reflections for the day.
Remembrance Day. What does it mean for you, Remembrance Day? For me, personally speaking, it takes on a whole new significance this year when I see the news feeds and I wonder, are we sleepwalking into a nuclear war and World War III? Do us as human beings ever learn the lessons of history? Here's a poem. It's for those who leave and never return, and for those who return, but are never the same. We remember. It's called Red Paper Poppies of Remembrance. And it goes like this. The silence of remembrance at the war memorial. A place for shared thoughts beyond the concept of borders, where ranks of red paper poppies symbolise the hope for world peace. Heads are bowed in remembrance, a community praying one day future generations of men and women will not have to bury their children. And the whole world remembers what it means to be human. Standing resolute in remembrance, legions of red paper poppies, recording lives, remembering names like crosses in regimental lines. Those who did their duty, recalling tragedy and heartache. A bugle call of remembrance, memorial to family and friends who loyally made our world a safer place to live. A call to arms, remembering the loss and their deaths on this day. Tins are shaken in remembrance, a percussive ring of charity, while coins drop like petals beneath gun metal November skies, rain falling as bitter tears, testament to memory and mourning. Red paper poppies of remembrance, like the blood they shed for us, the ultimate sacrifice they made. Lives falling as petals in the wind, finding shelter in lapels to adorn as we remember and give refuge.
That's Ian Henry, the poet in residence here at WCRFM. Councillor Bhupinder Gokhale, who is a leader within the Sikh community, came down to visit me in the studios from the ceremony in Wensfield, and I asked him for his reflections for Remembrance Sunday.
What I've noticed now, I mean, I've been a councillor for the past 12 years, and I've been attending Remembrance Sunday in Wensfield for the past 13 years, and it's grown. And what I've seen now over the years is more and more young kids getting involved,
right,
and asking questions. And the one thing particularly that really touches me is the pride. People have pride in their country, in their areas, in their cities. Mm. You know, attending Remembrance Sunday. and asking questions, laying the wreaths, and, you know, that minute silence where you can virtually just hear a pin drop. I mean, I remember growing up as a kid, you had that disrespect. You know, you had a few people at the cenotaph, and how times are changing. And it's good to see that change.
It is, and I had those reflections as well, actually, seeing those changes. But also I think maybe at the moment, because of Ukraine, people have a greater awareness of the sacrifice that's involved there. And earlier on when we were remembering, then, you know, having Ukraine in our thoughts helped, really, because we maybe, you know, the Somme is over 100 years away, you know, and 39, 45, you know, born after there. But now seeing Ukraine and seeing the suffering that's there, you know, it really does drive it home.
It does, Chris, but I mean, we've also got to realise, you know, this is 2022 and we live in a multicultural society now, and we're not only just remembering the First World War, we're remembering soldiers from, you know, from the Empire.
Yeah.
You know, we're remembering soldiers from across the world that came to the call. You know, when England called, people stepped up, and we're remembering soldiers from the First World War, the Second World War, the Falklands. We're remembering soldiers from the Boer War. You know, people are researching their family history and coming up and coming forward and saying, well, my great father was involved in this particular war. And it's, you know, I just find it really touching when I see people turn up on Remembrance Sunday wearing their forefathers' medals. You know, I think, what a great gesture that is.
Oh, amazing. And you were at the forefront of having that wonderful statue put up outside, well, in Wensfield, you know, for Sarah Gary, those who fell there, that great last stand. And I, you know, I had the privilege of doing a live broadcast from there as well. One of the shows I look back on with great fondness because of the moment. But that's there again, remembering the Sikh soldiers who fell there, but also the Muslim cook.
Absolutely.
You know, and we are a multicultural city, and it's great, I think, when all the different cultures come together to recognise freedom, democracy, those kind of values that we have at the heart of our society.
Absolutely, Chris. I mean, you know, this is England. I mean, this is democracy. You know, other countries, for me, they talk about democracy, but this is England. This is where you can come here with a dream, with a vision, and fulfil that. This is England where you can come here with a passion, a desire, and do something, and be helped along the way. You know, and when we did this statue, when we put this project together, we completed this project within 18 months. That was from start to finish, you know, from the actual start of this is a dream.
Yeah.
From actual, we've done it, this is a grand unveiling. And to see everybody come together, everybody, councils come together, people come together from different religions, different backgrounds, it's a wonderful feeling. And you know something, Chris, if I can just say this, God built Yorkshire. You know, Yorkshire's God's county. But when he had a couple of hours spare, he built Wensfield.
I can't argue on that one. I've got no argument on that one whatsoever. But the point you're making there, last week, this is Islamophobia Awareness Month. And last week I was talking to someone who's trying to raise the awareness about that hate across the city, across the country at times. And yet Remembrance Sunday is when people of all different faiths and backgrounds come together. And I think, you know, the stereotyping that's done to ethnic minority groups at times, such as Muslims, such as Sikhs, different ethnic backgrounds, you know. Yeah. Being British doesn't matter where you come from, you know. It is actually bringing people together, and days like this can honour those who've enabled the country to be as it is.
Absolutely. I remember, Chris, going way back now, early 70s, and watching when it used to be on the TV, I think it was BBC One, Remembrance Sunday March. And right at the back of the queue, I saw Sikh soldiers marching.
Right.
And I was amazed. I thought, we've got Sikh soldiers, you know, marching. Does that mean we were involved in these conflicts? You know, because to be honest with you, I never knew.
Right.
You know, I never knew. And history really didn't teach me what I wanted to learn. You know, it was little bits and little
bits. And history's been written in a certain way at times. Yeah. And the heroes from lots of different ethnic backgrounds, they don't know about it. They say history is written by the winners, but it's very biased history,
absolutely,
isn't it? And you've got to turn, people have got to, you know, discover their heritage and be proud of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we've got families, let's say Wolverhampton, we've got families here that their forefathers, their great-great-great-grandfathers probably served in India, you know. So we've all got that connection. Not only India, you know, we've got parents who are probably served in four corners of the world. So it's great when you attend a Remembrance Sunday and you see people from different faiths actually there, you know, and people from different religions, different backgrounds in the British Army. For me, that gives me a great feeling that we're seeing this difference. This multicultural society is here, and long may it live.
That's Councillor Bhupinder Gokhale, the councillor for Wensfield South, with his reflections for Remembrance Sunday and also really for the way our society is developing. Superintendent Simon Inglis is from West Midlands Police, and there's now another important survey being carried out to try to reduce the threat to women and girls across the city with regard to violence, helping them to feel safe. Here's Simon to explain what that survey is all about.
Yeah, so absolutely. West Midlands Police, in partnership with Safer Wolverhampton Partnership, are clearly working together because violence against women and girls is really, really important to us. Not just now, not just because of events that have taken place over the last couple of years, but actually moving forward, we really need to focus on it. So we need to understand how safe women and girls feel in the city.
Yeah, and the idea behind that is where they feel unsafe, you can make some changes?
Absolutely, yeah. So with all types of crime, you have a victim, you have an offender, and sometimes it's connected to a location. This is mainly focused on the location. We want to know where do people feel safe, not just in a city centre, but all across Wolverhampton, whether they work here, whether they visit, or whether they live in Wolverhampton. We want them to tell us about the locations where they do feel safe, but also where they possibly don't.
Right.
And like you say, it's about then responding to that. So where can we put better cameras? Where can we have better police patrols? Where can we change the lighting? Things of that nature. So there's infrastructure things that we can then collectively work on to then go back to the council. We then look at where we can fund that, and then we get the support in there. So we need to understand where those are.
Right, so there is some funding in place in order to make those kind of adaptations, really, to make people feel safer?
Yeah, absolutely. We know everything is really, really tight at the moment, and cost of living and budgets are being called and pulled, you know, tighter. But the reality of it is that there is always funding available to try and support locations, and there's funding to enhance cameras, lighting. I have my own offices, and I want to put them in the right locations. So it's about that being an informed decision. And the more people that contribute to the survey to tell us what they think, the better we can then respond.
I'm going to say, you know, you or I walking around, we wouldn't have a clue, would we, really? I suppose there's places where, whatever gender you are, you can feel unsafe. But actually, you really need the insights from women and young women and girls across the city. And you know, that's about being a listener, isn't it, as a service?
Absolutely, 100%. Ultimately, Wolverhampton is a very, very safe city. We know that. But we can't take it for granted. We need to understand how people do feel. And there are going to be times, locations, where people have seen or witnessed things, or they basically are coming into the city to, you know, use the nighttime establishments. They might just come in for, you know, entertainment or go to the gym. But there might be certain bus routes, there might be certain parks where we can enhance lighting, we can get better patrols, we can have better security. And they might be thinking, I'm not really sure about how safe I feel around here. Who do I tell? Well, this survey allows people to actually give us that clear detail so that we can then understand and collate it all. So we've got a big infrastructure sat behind this to understand all the data. And I'll be coming back to you and hopefully via this medium sharing what we're going to be doing based on the findings.
That'd be really good. And I know from talking to one of Bhupinder's colleagues that we chatted to in a minute or two, Councillor Beverley Mamenabadi, you know, when we talk, actually it was back on International Women's Day, the kind of aggression that women naturally get thrown at them just through being women. There's a lot of chauvinism out there. There's a lot of hatred of women as well. And sometimes there's these terrible myths we hear about, well, you know, people get, if they dress that way, then they're going to get attacked, aren't they? We've got to smash those myths too, because there's a right for people to go out how they want to in the safest possible way.
Absolutely. Everybody should feel safe to walk in and around the place where they live, they work, they visit. Wolverhampton, as we say, is a safe city. But yes, they have the right to do that. And this is about calling it out. Tell us where it's happening so that we can then do something about it.
And if you catch perpetrators?
Absolutely. We will use all elements of the law to take action against
them. And it's worth saying, I know earlier on this morning I was talking to Alex Spencer from The Haven Wolverhampton, because they're celebrating their 50th anniversary next year, and they're collecting stories. And we were just, you know, repeating the fact is, you know, if you ever feel unsafe as a woman, a girl, or anybody really, ring 999. If you're in a domestic abuse situation and you can ring it and then tap the phone, the person answering will know what your problem is, or ring 111. So you're always there to want to catch the perpetrators, but also you want to design out the attacks or the places where people feel unsafe.
Absolutely. And that's what this survey is about. As you've mentioned, they're about victims and offenders. There is significant services in place for those that are victims, and we will take positive action, robust action against offending. This is about those locations as well, though. And this is the bit where this survey is running from the 10th now, the 10th of November, right the way through to the 10th of December for the whole month. And in a moment, if I can, I'll explain how people can sign up to the survey and give us that information. But also it runs concurrently with Orange Wolves, which is coming up on the 25th yep. of November, which, as you know, this city supports wholeheartedly. So it shows our partnership approach to understanding how safe women and girls feel in this city.
And tackling fear of crime, which we're talking about here, is a very different to tackling crime itself, isn't it? So as you say, it's a low crime city, but actually if you don't feel it's a low crime city, then you know you don't have the quality of life you want. So tackling the fear of crime, this is what you're really trying to get to.
Absolutely. And this is part of this messaging that we, with me being here today and the messaging we're putting out around this survey, is that we don't want people to take it for granted that we think, oh, it's a safe city, so everything's all okay. We're going to be doing this annually so that we can understand not only where people do feel safe or don't, but actually that we can show that we've made a difference by coming back and saying, last year you said here, the survey will hopefully show us that actually people do feel safer there.
Yeah.
So yes, the fear of crime is just as important as the crime itself.
So it's a kind of, you know, you said, we did. We will check you up on that one. 100%. So how can people fill in the survey? Where do they go to?
So there are a number of ways that they can do it. For people sat at home now or in the cars, listening on the radio, the easiest way to find it is you just go to the wolverhampton.gov.uk website, just the local Wolverhampton website. Right at the top there is a banner. You just click on that banner, and the survey just takes a couple of minutes to fill in. It's brilliant. We're also distributing thousands of leaflets because there is a web link and there is a QR code for the younger people that tend to use those these days.
Right.
So right across the city. But for those people listening right now, if you've got a pen, wolverhampton.gov.uk, right at the top, there's a banner.
That's Superintendent Simon Inglis from West Midlands Police. And if you want to go, as they said, to the survey, then just go to wolverhampton.gov.uk and click on the banner. Alex Spencer is from The Haven in Wolverhampton, newly arrived there as the communications manager. When I caught up with her, I asked her why she wanted to work for The Haven.
Yeah, I suppose it's quite obvious, yeah. But I've been working in communications for a while now, and I actually used to work as an outreach worker, so kind of with a domestic abuse charity, a different one in Loughborough. So when the chance to use my communication skills, but for a charity as wonderful as The Haven, obviously, yeah, I just was like, right, yeah, I've got to go for it. And then luckily, I got the job, and I'm about 6 weeks in now. And every day I learn something new about the charity that just blows me away. So, yes, so far, so good. It's just a wonderful place to be. And yes, just a tip to my manager, thank you for the job.
Well, no, I've had the privilege of interviewing a few people from The Haven, your colleague Pam, on a number of occasions as well, and you know, do absolutely fantastic work, and have been doing it for 49 years. So next year, big one.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, next year is our 50th anniversary. So as part of that, we're running a campaign called 50 Stories for 50 Years. And because we thought it's really easy for us to say, we do amazing work, of course it is, and we're going to say that. But we really want to gather stories of people who've either been supported by us, or worked for us, or volunteered for us, or fundraised for us. We want to hear those people and get first-hand experiences of how it might have changed their life in some way. So that's what we're doing for next year. So we're kind of calling out for people to please come forward if possible, and just tell your story in as much or as little detail as you need to. Can be done anonymously, but it would also be lovely to have some people come forward where we can say, this is your name, this is your picture. And yeah, that's what we're hoping to do.
And your colleague, Pam, I've always said, has got one of the most fantastic job titles in the world. She's the architect of stories as well. And we're talking right through the programme today about the importance of words as well. And in fact, you know, let's not use the word violence, let's use the word abuse, because a lot of cruelty to women is actually mental, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Luckily now, you know, the narrative is sort of shifting, and we're talking about domestic abuse more than we do domestic violence, which obviously was the term originally used. I think it wasn't really until the 70s that it was domestic violence was even talked about. So it's quite even a new thing to be speaking about when we were kind of created, as it were, by Colin Brown and Honor Pringle in 1973. So obviously we support women and children who've been affected by or subjected to domestic abuse or homelessness. And we really want to tell stories, mainly because, as my colleague Pam, we were talking about this week, and she said it just the main reason why it's important is it lets people who are in that situation currently and perhaps can't see a way out to look at those stories and say, okay, it's possible, you know, it's possible to get out of this situation. Because people often say that being subjected to abuse, it's a bit like living on a desert island and you can't see a way out. You can't see that there's any life beyond that island. So telling these stories is almost like, here's a boat, you know, let's take you and start you on that journey to a life that's free of abuse and free of control. Absolutely, like you said, Chris, it's not just violence. It can be a lot more subtle than that. But what I would say, and what we always say, is if you've got to trust your gut. So if anyone out there is listening and isn't quite sure if what they're going through or what they're experiencing is right or right or wrong or however they're feeling about it, please give us a call on our helpline, because we can discuss that with you, and we would love we're here to support you 24 hours a day.
Before we forget, because I always forget these things, reminders of your number. I've got it written down here, but just reminders of your number, because I'll forget later.
I know. Well, I've got it also written down here because I thought that might come up.
It will.
So our 24-hour helpline number is 08000 194 400. And again, we're well aware that people might not be in a place to call. It might not be safe to call for loads of reasons. So if that is the case, you can go to our website, which is havenrefuge.org.uk, and we do like a web chat service, so you know, you can speak to someone and just type the message out rather than having to say it, because sometimes it is for whatever reason just too difficult at that point to say anything out loud. So yeah, we understand that too. We have access to interpreters, there is no barrier to accessing our support. Obviously we will do whatever we need to do to support anyone who needs it. That's not a problem at all. We do have access to interpreters.
And just going back to people raising the issue, you know, if they're feeling vulnerable at home, then again, they've got various ways of doing it, isn't there? And they don't need to speak. I think they can ring the emergency services and then just tap the phone. That's a sign then, isn't it, to the person at the emergency service about what's going on?
Yeah, and that's another important point. Obviously, you know, it sounds so obvious, but please, if anyone is ever feeling like this, you know, I need support right here and right now, this is an emergency situation, of course ring 999. If it's not an emergency situation, you're just wanting some advice and support, please do call us. There are loads of resources on our website, you know, for people to sort of have a read, and you know, again, if they're not quite sure what exactly is happening to them. And again, the more stories we tell, coming back to the stories, the more stories we tell, the more it will resonate with people, and they'll say, okay, right, well, the support is here, the support is ready to be accessed. I can, with support, start my journey to live in a life that's free of control. And the unfortunate fact is that most of us will either know somebody, you know, or know somebody that knows somebody who's been subjected to abuse or will be at some point in their life. Because, you know, as we know, all sorts can go on behind closed doors. So, yes, it's very, very important to put a face to the issue to make, you know, because it is a human issue. And again, you know, we most likely know someone. We might not know of it, but we probably know someone who's being subjected to this. So we need it to be an issue that's on everyone's mind.
That's Alex Spencer from The Haven, Wolverhampton. Yes, if you've got a story you'd like to share as part of their 50th anniversary, then go to their website, havenrefuge.org.uk. Councillor Steve Evans is the Cabinet Member for the Environment and Climate Change. Obviously, COP27 has been in the news. When I spoke to Steve, I asked him what could be happening in Wolverhampton, because I knew it was a big priority for the City Council.
It is indeed, and there's a number of things we're doing locally that obviously we're hoping will impact nationally in terms of targets. But if I give you just some very quick examples, some are quite simple. You know, we've got a scheme called Podback. This is about coffee pods.
Oh, right.
And it costs the City Council nothing, or the council taxpayers. But we've teamed up with a company called Podback, and they're funding the scheme, by which over about 400 households actually have signed up across the city, where, you know, the coffee pods you use in the drinks machines, they'll come and collect them.
Right.
Of course, they recycle them and turn them into alternative materials, some of which are even building materials. So it's cost neutral. A great little scheme and slowly taking off.
And if you take the coffee out of there, you know, even when you've used it, it's very good for compost too.
Absolutely. So that's one example. But of course, the more bigger and better known schemes are finally taking shape. For example, the solar farm, Bowman's Arbour, going to supply around 70% of clean energy to New Crosses Hospital. So that's really good to see. And we've been electrifying our fleet. We've got some 400 vehicles, and we've done the whole of the Meals on Wheels vehicles. And we're currently doing other vehicles that we use in terms of our services, but not just the vehicles. We're actually looking at a lot of our equipment, you know, that cuts the grass or picks up the leaves or the street cleansing. We're using electrification with those tools as well.
And that can make a big... It's a big investment, isn't it? But it can make a big difference in the long term. I presume in the longer term, then you also save some costs.
Well, of course, yeah. We've all seen the rising costs of fuel. And of course, energy prices are going up, but it is cheaper to electrify your vehicles than it is to fill them up with fuel. Of course, it's better for the environment. And actually, we're getting some very good deals out there at the moment. Sometimes it's better to buy the vehicle, and other times it's better to hire. But yeah, you know, it's a win-win-win as far as we're concerned.
And how are your tiny forests doing? You know, because that again, you're telling me about last time.
Yeah, we got 12 tiny forests across the city, and these are now bigger than a small football pitch, and they only grow sort of like 2 to 3 feet high. But it's actually the participation of younger people in particular at schools, and there is biodiversity towards them, and it does create that clean atmosphere, a bit like, you know, when you walk into a forest or somewhere like Cannock Chase, you feel all the oxygen off the trees. These are very similar.
Right. A great experience. And again, great learning, I suppose, for young people, children as well, when they sort of can get that experience too. Now, you're also, you know, a part of your portfolio is looking at the city centre. Lots of transformation proposals going forward. Some great artist impressions on the wolverhampton.gov.uk website as well. Bring us up to date on where you are with that one.
Okay, I think people will be aware that we've been doing quite a lot of work in Victoria Street, which of course needed regenerating, and into North Street, you know, we're approaching phase one coming together for the civic halls. It's been difficult, and you know, these things always take a long time to do if you're going to do them properly,
and the impact on businesses as well, which I know there's been a concern.
Listen, I'm not going to lie, you know, the businesses have got a tough environment anyway, you know, whether we was doing any works or not. You know, some of the businesses I go to are a bit quieter than they have been. There is a cost of living crisis for obvious reasons, with bills, energy bills, mortgages going up. But, you know, after COVID as well, especially, it's been tough. And all we can do is try and create the right environment for businesses to try and survive and thrive. And that's what we're aiming to do by using the government's funding in the right way.
And you know, in the longer term, if you've got a very attractive city centre, then it's going to encourage tourism more and more. And, you know, Wolverhampton won't be a hidden gem anymore. It'll be a place that people want to come to with a great transport infrastructure too.
No, it's very true. And, you know, people might say, well, what's in Wolverhampton? But sometimes we undersell ourselves. We've got the biggest footfall in terms of visitors in the West Midlands outside of Birmingham. And when you think of, you know, places like Civic Halls, the Grand Theatre, the Molyneux, the Racecourse, the Art Gallery, which we had the British Art Show this year, we get hundreds of thousands of visitors regularly. I think the key is, and the trick is, how can we keep them in our local area after they visited?
Right.
And if you create the right environment for businesses and the right offers there, people will stay. And we have got to change. You know, city centres and town centres across the country, you know, can't carry on as just being your normal street name shops. You know, people shop online. That's a fact.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a chance to survive.
And earlier on in the show as well, we were talking, hearing from Superintendent Simon Inglis about people feeling safe. And that's an important part, again, about the developments in the city centre.
Absolutely, because the safer you feel, the more likely you are to visit and stay. And of course, it kind of like full cycle, isn't it? That, you know, that the more people to visit and feel safe, the more people will stay again. And it's like that never-ending circle. If you get the right offer and you get it the right environment, I do think people will visit. I do think they'll spend quality time with the families. And if you've got good events, you know, it's not just about shops. You've got good leisure events and a good leisure offer, people will come to that offer, they will, without doubt. But we have got to make it feel safe, and that's for pedestrians, cyclists, public transport, as well as car drivers. We welcome all.
And Christmases are coming. I won't mention the turkeys because there's a shortage of them because of avian flu. Heard from David King in our Taste Wolverhampton show earlier. But yes, you got the light turn on tour. We could probably call it that, couldn't we?
You could indeed. And it starts, or it kicks off next Saturday, 3 till 7 in the city centre with the switch on at 6 p.m. And of course, your very own Dickie Dodd will be there, yeah, as will Tony Christie and Hey Dougie.
Hey, yeah, how about that? And then you're going around the city, basically, aren't you, in different places?
We are, and it'll be Thursday. We'll be in Wensfield High Street, 4:30 till 7 p.m.
Right.
With a 6:30 switch on of the lights. On Friday, it will be Bilston, 4:30 again till 7 p.m. with a 6:30 p.m. switch on of the lights. And then Saturday will be in Tetnall, 4:30 till 7 p.m, 6:30 p.m. switch on of the lights. And then finally on the Sunday at Bantock. But there'll be lots going on, not just on the days we do the lights switch on. You know, we've got loads in store between now and Christmas. And even a Nutcracker Soldier trail for people to track down. You know, of course, we'll be having Father Christmas in the Mander Centre.
Yeah.
And there'll be lots going on in terms of Christmas markets. And of course, our very own markets in Bilston, Wensfield and the city centre, they'll be opening for extra hours and extra days in the run-up to Christmas.
So we're saying don't shop online, shop local, get out there, enjoy the lights, enjoy the activities. And it's a chance for communities to celebrate. Obviously, it's a faith-based celebration, and it's a family-based celebration, but also a chance for communities to come together. It's the one time in the year when people sort of begin to say, yes, let's go and do something special. And, you know, even in the, perhaps when it's cost of living around, the crisis around, then, you know, make your presence small and meaningful.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's all about thinking of others, isn't it? And it hasn't always got to involve, as you said, spending hundreds of pounds on presents. You know, it is about families coming together, and particularly younger people. You know, I don't care what anybody says, it's still a special time.
Yeah.
And, you know, just seeing the lights, you know, is enough for a lot of young people to get that little bit of sparkle. And, you know, they can only dream of Father Christmas and what it's all about. And I think it's our job, actually, to try and create a special occasion as we can, especially for younger people. And then for the parents and grandparents to see the joy on little ones' faces, I think it's special for them as well.
That's Councillor Steve Evans, the Cabinet Member for the Environment and Climate Change. Councillor Chris Burton is the Cabinet Member for Education and Skills. A number of events for those with special educational needs and disabilities and their families held at the moment, but this is all about trying to shape policy as well.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one. I think one of the things that places around the country and indeed around the world are really poor at with, we can put all of the provisions in place to help people with special education needs when they're in school, and then where things start to fall down is transition. And I think what this event is about, it's not just putting an event on for the sake of putting an event on.
Right.
It's gathering people in the room, employers in the room, and support staff in the room to help people get into employment and get into meaningful employment that they can then live meaningful, well-developed lives.
So it's about the journey, starting the journey, yeah. and maybe plotting the journey further. You know, some might be on that journey already, but they can see what the next step is.
Precisely. And I think plotting that journey, especially with people with certain special education needs, having a future plan is a really important thing. And if we can support that, it's a really positive step. Get some employers in there, maybe in low sensory workplaces, places with specific job roles. It's a really wonderful opportunity to bring people together and say, well, actually, no, everyone's a valid member of society, everyone's included, and in Wolverhampton, this is how we can support this. And I think that's the ethos of the event.
And often people get written off, don't they, because of needs, disabilities, when often, you know, the mind is as sharp as anybody else's, but people get labelled and stereotyped, and it's also trying to break through some of those barriers too.
Yeah, and I think that's what's part of what's important about this event. I hate the word normalising because it lends itself into the word normal and abnormal, and that's not the way that this is. We're talking about everyone's got a place in our society. There are roles for everyone, and actually you can live a fulfilling life in Wolverhampton, and we're going to support that.
No, that's good. And the other thing that, you know, you're developing here is not separating off those with special educational needs and disabilities, but actually trying to put, you know, centres near schools or whatever.
Yeah, so we're looking at, and this is one of the big pieces of policy we're trying to drive forward in the city at the moment, is we support special education needs schools, and we want as many places as possible. But for certain special education needs, they'd benefit from being within the context of a mainstream school, but having specific support in place. And we're looking at trying to get the consultation in place to ask parents what they think, and ask residents what they think of, actually, when we're rebuilding a school, we've got a school rebuilding programme coming up.
Yeah.
And as that's coming up, putting on these special education needs resources in existing schools so that kids can come to school, have direct support when they need it, but at playtime, at break time, and in certain lessons, they can go back and be within mainstream education, building mainstream relationships. But actually, that's helpful for everyone else as well, because I find when we're in Wolverhampton, we have adults sometimes who don't understand how to interact with people. And actually, we can build that. We're a society, not separate societies. We're a community, not separate communities. And how can we support that? So actually, this school rebuilding programme gives us the best opportunity we've ever had to make sure we're up in our SEND provision in schools, but meaningfully as well.
Do you ever have any opposition from parents of children who aren't in special educational needs disabilities? They don't want that interaction there. They just want to, you know, be along. Let's get away from the normal, the usual, I don't know, really, those who aren't disabled. Do you ever get that kind of reaction?
Yeah, of course. And I'd say, fortunately, in Wolverhampton, it's rare. I've heard of much more extreme cases around the country, but fortunately, in Wolverhampton, it's rare. And I think we need to get past it because that's not... one of my best friends in Wolverhampton is a wonderful lad. You might have met him. He's called Cash Hawker, very involved in this kind of things. And he's autistic. And there was a point in his life where he might have been put into an external provision, but Cash has gone on in mainstream education, into a mainstream university, and into a mainstream career. And actually, we might have denied him that chance in life,
right,
if he'd have been segregated into that sort of environment. And so, yeah, we do get some pushback from parents. And that's what the consultation's for, to say, well, actually, what are your concerns? Because your concerns do matter, but how can we get over them together? And how can we build a resource that includes everyone?
Earlier on in the show, thinking of Remembrance Sunday, thinking about the multicultural society we have, different people from different ethnic backgrounds, it should be exactly the same, shouldn't it? It should actually be people with all sorts of abilities, disabilities, however we put it, coming together, equality right across there.
Well, precisely, and I think that is the guiding message here of saying, well, if you're in Wolverhampton, these are the opportunities you'll get. And those opportunities aren't conditional. Those opportunities are for everyone to succeed, because I think, and I meet this with people who aren't from Wolverhampton, they come in and they say, actually, people are included here and people do get along with each other. And actually, it's something I'm proud of about Wolverhampton. It's, I don't care who you are, I don't care where you're from, but you're from Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
And even if you're not from Wolverhampton, you could become a Wolverhampton just by getting
involved
in the city.
I'm a foreigner.
Yeah, you've crossed the border yourself, but you're part of our community as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I think that's a really important thing. I think it is
a welcoming city. Now, you had a, I've got one over on you here, I now discover. You had an education inclusion summit, which had Jay Blades there, but you weren't able to get there and didn't meet him, whereas I've interviewed him.
No, sadly, I only got there in the late afternoon for a section I was doing, so I missed Jay Blades as well. And I know my mum was annoyed at that, because she'd have loved a picture of me with Jay Blades, much more than a picture of just me. If it was me and Jay Blades, that would have been the...
that would have been the icing on the cake there. But such events such as that, and Jay is a great champion, and as I met him when he was part of the opening at St Michael's School in Tettenham, when they had their special unit open there as well. And obviously had his own educational journey, which people will be aware of, and learned to read at 50. So he's a great champion of that. But such an event, again, really important.
It is really important. I think when they get splashed on headlines, sometimes people don't understand why we have inclusion conferences for education. But I think what we've got to remember is, when I trained as a teacher, this was all in the teacher training, because that was only 4 years ago. All of this was in there. People who've been working in the classroom for 30 years, none of this was in there. They weren't aware of how you necessarily deal with people in different communities, how that changes. Teaching English as a second language wasn't so big on the curriculum in the 70s, but now, of course, when I did teacher training, it was on there. It's how we have those conversations, and just making sure you're not accidentally excluding anyone from anything. Because I think no one sets out to be mean. No one sets out to exclude people. No one, of course, you've got your loud minority sometimes. But not many people are out there and say, I'm going to go into this classroom and say something sexist. People don't start like that, but they make mistakes. And I think as long as we have that consensual,
slow the barriers
process of
learning, for people, isn't it? There's the barriers for people, and those, you know, we don't see them until somebody points out, someone teaches us. That's the way to get those barriers removed.
And this kind of conference was more about bringing people who are experts around to tell us, well, actually, this is a really good way of doing it. Why don't you try this in your practice? And getting rid of that knee-jerk reaction of, no, that's wrong, don't do that. And it's sort of building that together. It comes back to the idea of community coming together and that sort of cohesive approach to education. That's what was important. Lots of the conversations were there about actually student stress, student anxiety, student mental health, and how that might change if you're from different communities. And I think everyone I've spoken to said it was really positive, and the anonymous feedback said it was positive as well, useful.
And you take those, does that then shape policy moving forward, or are we talking here particularly around training? Does that feedback go anywhere to help reshape? You know, you're trained more recently than many teachers, as you were saying, but is that able to then be taken and used in different ways, that information?
So 100% it comes back into our policy, because it lets us know, well, actually, what community is in our schools? What do our school communities look like? So that helps us from our side. Of course, with the current system where we have local authority schools and academies, we can't tell the academies what to do. But in Wolverhampton, actually, we have a really great system where they ask us, and we do get to share that knowledge, and we have that sort of back and forth challenge and support, and it does get back to them. It gets back to the schools, and actually, lots of the people there, and we invite our... Every year we invite our newly qualified teachers in, and we share that best practice there. So even if it's not so easy to change 30 years of ingrained practice, we can shape it with these new teachers that are coming into the system, and they were really receptive to it as well.
Now, one of the other things, obviously, schools are at the heart of is flu fighting. And I saw you were down there encouraging... it's not a jab, is it? It's a spray.
No, it's not a jab.
It's a spray.
It did make me smile, because they said, oh, will you come and speak with the children about getting their vaccines? I was like, oh, I don't want to stress them out if they're having, you know, injections. It might be a stressful time. No, it's a puff up the nose and a puff up the other nostril. And I was speaking to this this young girl who was there having hers, and I was like, oh, you know. She went, no. And I was like, okay, well, fair enough. Then she had it, and she was giggling throughout the whole thing. It tickled. But yeah, it is. It's your standard flu vaccine, but delivered through a spray.
That's Councillor Chris Burton, the Cabinet Member for Education and Skills on the City of Wolverhampton Council. The final guest on the podcast this week is the Director of Public Health at Wolverhampton, John Denley. I noticed they'd won an award, so first of all, I said, congratulations. Tell us what the award is all about.
Well, I see it really more of a... It's great. Thanks very much for saying that. The award was given by the UKPHR, which is a UK Public Health Register, which is basically our regulator within public health. You have it in schools, Ofsted, and so CQC,
and so forth.
Care facilities, but this was awarded to the organisation rather than public health, but it was related to public health workforce. And the reason why it was given a national award, it was really good to win that, was our local authority, right the way through COVID, right the way through, well, before then, actually, into the past 4 or 5 years, we've really tried to specialise on going and on growing our own. And that was really, that really came to the fore right the way through the pandemic. We made sure that we developed people as much as possible in their specialism, because public health is a specialist discipline. And right the way through COVID, we never got any companies in, we never got any additional support in relation to delivering specialities and so forth. So all our workforce can, I'll just use the example, all my colleagues in the department can have a specialism such as, say, teenage pregnancy or tackling physical activity, but equally they can manage an outbreak or they can coordinate a clinic and so forth. And that's, it's great to have had that recognised at national level, but it wouldn't have happened if the local authority hadn't, as in through the leadership, chief exec, the leader, cabinet member, had not kind of said, this is the framework in which we want to develop. And they're all local people, which is great.
No, it is good. And I've picked that up from my side of the microphone sometime when actually we've looked at a specialist area and you said, oh, this is the person you need to speak to. So we picked up those aspects too. So no, it's nice when your regulator gives you an award rather than telling you off, isn't it? Let's face it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Make the most of it.
You always wonder what's in the email when you open it. Oh, blimey. Okay. Oh, right. That's lovely.
We have our own moments as well. So, you know, yeah. I can just say that. We have Ofcom, obviously, as our moderator, our regulator, I should say. Now, COVID, we hear some national figures. What's happening in Wolverhampton?
It's less prevalent than it was, because I think we reached a peak about 4 weeks ago, thereabouts. We don't now provide our surveillance data in terms of getting a really accurate figure of what's going on in relation to the number of tests and so forth. All that's kind of gone. And a lot of people in Wolverhampton are still testing anyway, just to check and so forth. But we don't really record that. People have got the message about how to manage and so forth. So the only thing we can use is the national survey, which is a random selection of the population of which we can, the footprint in which it measures for us is the West Midlands. And from there, we look at our outbreaks and say, yeah, it's about there. So at its peak, it was about one in every 30, and that was about 3-4 weeks ago. One in every 30 people we'd estimate in Wolverhampton were positive. And if you think about that 2.5 years ago, you go, oh my goodness, you know, that's awful. And that's gone outwards in terms of less people infected to one in every 35. And now we think it's about one in 40. So we're over the hump of the outbreak. But a lot of discussion now, Chris, is trying to take a different approach to COVID now, given what we've got to almost defend ourselves through that.
And so this is about living. Is about living with it as we move forward.
Absolutely.
So because it's going to, you know, like all viruses, it's going to get clever. You're going to need different vaccines as we move forward. So it's living in that new world.
Yeah, absolutely. So we live with it, and the best way you can live with it is to be as protected as possible, and that's why the vaccines are really good. And I say that really quickly, but it just is. Everything comes back to the vaccine, and that's why, even though we've got a really high prevalence, and we've had a really high prevalence for the past 4 weeks, peaking and then now coming down to one in every 40, the number of people in hospital in relation to COVID is a lot less. And those people who are in hospital are either those who haven't completed their full vaccination schedule or haven't been vaccinated, or indeed were very vulnerable anyway. So the key messages with all that is, if you're vulnerable, please, please, please get your vaccine. Even if you're not classed as vulnerable, just complete your courses. It's not about, well, I had one a good while ago, that'll suit me. They're there for a reason. We don't do it for fun. It's not kind of, oh, we'll roll out another national program or a booster or so forth. It's to keep us recovering, keep us safe, and keep us in a place where we can live with it.
And as individuals, we've got a responsibility for our own health, haven't we? So therefore, we're the ones best to know, okay, when did I have my third one? When should my booster be? How many weeks is it? So we need to take this, you know, take the responsibility for ourselves and our family, don't we, on this one? And there's lots of opportunities too. You've got a pop-up clinic in Well Lane in Wentzville Library this coming week as well, working with St John's Ambulance. That's obviously going to go in different places. You're trying to get out to where people are, which has really helped as well.
Yeah, we're very much driven by data, as you say. So we want to make sure that the city is protected as possible. So we look at the data and we say, how do we compare to elsewhere? Where are the places we've got lower uptake? And we've been working with a number of partners. One in particular has been absolutely fantastic, St John's Ambulance, to kind of get out there and deliver the program in partnership with some of our local general practices as well. So that's an ongoing program, and that's made a real difference over the summer. We've narrowed the gap, as you know, deprived areas and places like the Black Country, Wolverhampton, part of that, and the West Midlands have a lower uptake compared to the rest of the country. We've been narrowing the gap over the summer, which has been really, really pleasing. And that it's really surprising, Chris. We've had people coming for the first time and continue to do that. So it's about access, making a decision and acting on it, but being able to act on that decision and making accessibility as easy as possible when that decision's made. So I'm really pleased with that, and great partners all around in doing that.
And tied in loosely with that, I mentioned this last week on the show, and that is the catch-up clinics for pupils who miss their flu vaccinations as well. It's not a needle this time, it's a nasal spray. I think probably one that's better than a needle, I don't know really. But again, an important thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this comes back to all the elements about protecting your population. So we talk about COVID, we talk about even things like screening, health checks, anything like that, or just generally keeping yourself well. Everything has an impact. So there's no point just looking at things in isolation. And that's why we want to try and make sure we have as many people take up the flu vaccination opportunity. And some people say, well, you know, it doesn't really affect children. Why are we subjecting our children to doing that? It's all about, well, it might do. And it's a pretty nasty effect if it does. But it also protects the population. We all live together. We're not isolated. We've seen that through COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, the opportunity is there to get those catch-ups.
And obviously appointments can be booked as Wolverhampton number 2077. That's 200077. And obviously parents and guardians need to give consent. But if you ring that number, then you'll be taken through the process, really. But do you make the most of that? You're giving out some money. there's a financial boost to local organisations to encourage people to take this lifestyle survey. Tell us about the survey to start with.
The survey is an adult lifestyle survey, and we in Wolverhampton have been doing this for a number of years. I think 10 years really, every 5 years. So we've done two or three during that period. And the traditional approach is very much about what we'll do is we'll go and get some specialists in who are good at surveys and say, can you go and come into Wolverhampton and do it? And in the same way as we talked about the award and Grown Our Own, we want to use local organisations actually to actually deliver this. So. We've gone to a lot of organisations where in the city and said, look, can you help us with this? We need to really dig into different communities to get a feel for things. And the reason why we are doing the lifestyle survey is we're like a nation of assumptions, aren't we, really? We'd say we think people behave or something happens because of a reason. Have we actually asked people? And that's what we're trying to do. So we're asking all sorts about lifestyles. It's alcohol, drinking, mental health, how they feel in relation to cost of living, crisis. So loads and loads of questions that are pertinent to enable us to plan about, oh, well, maybe it confirms what we're doing and we can put something in place for that. Or we say, well, we need to think about this because this has popped up. So we're asking those local organisations to help us to do so. So you might be asked as a resident of Wolverhampton to complete the survey, and it will put the money that we would have spent on an external organisation into those local organisations. Which again, it bolsters what we call the Wolverhampton pound.
I was about to say the Wolverhampton pound back to you on that one as well. And I suppose as well, using local organisations, using faith communities, you're reaching into the community, perhaps the vulnerable groups who wouldn't be picked up in the normal run of things that, you know, they're easily ignored, really. And so that's helping give you a real depth in your analysis.
Absolutely. And again, it comes back to the... We use the phrase, and it's used so much. I try not to use it in Wolverhampton. That if you talk about hard to reach, there's nobody in the community that goes, well, I'm hard to reach. You know, it's actually about how do we work with the community to get a view from the community, and the best way to do that is the engagement and supporting them to do it.
And that's the end of the podcast for this week. There'll be another one next week, and you can always find them on WCRFM's website. Go to WCRFM.com, search for the podcast, you get the information there. Or join me on Sunday morning between 7 and 10 for Rise and Shine with Debbie Hookston as my co-presenter. Always have a guest on there. And then for Chris Allen in Conversation between midday and 2 on WCRFM, number 1 for Wolverhampton.